At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Do you like cracking into curious creatures? Perhaps you ponder the paranormal. Have you ever got a hankering for the haunted? Ever entertained the existence of extraterrestrials? Or have you ever just wanted to hear genuine encounters of any kind? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, then Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracy Podcast is right up your alley. So grab your sense of humor and open your mind as we take a journey to uncover the mysteries behind kooky critters, spooky specters, enigmatic entities, and the controversial conspiracies that surround them. Buckle up, because we're going to have a good time.
Hey there, my name is Bree.
And I'm Suze.
We're the hosts of Crime and Spirits, a true crime and cocktail podcast. Do you love spooky stories and all things true crime?
How about themed cocktails? Do you love those too?
Well, that's perfect, because so do we.
Yeah, in fact, we love them so much, we made an entire podcast all about it.
Every week, we bring you a new episode that covers a different case or topic of interest, but first, we'll need drinks.
Don't you worry, we've got you covered there. Every week, we'll teach you how to make a handcrafted cocktail that ties into the theme or topic in some way.
So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much every other platform available.
New episodes roll out every Sunday.
So buckle up.
And sip tight.
We can't wait to talk some true crime with you. Bye.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, friends. Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's always good to hang out with you guys once again. Thanks for joining us for another cool Wednesday Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Yes. What story do you have for us today, Declan?
I am going to be talking about the Radioactive Boy Scout, also known as David Hahn. It's not a bad story. It's pretty interesting. That's why.
Oh.
You give me a bad look, but I promise it's not gross.
Okay, well, that's good, because it just sounds terrible. I don't want anybody to be radioactive.
The story is very interesting.
Okay, cool.
What are you going to be telling us about today, Mom?
I'm going to be telling you about a young woman who was sentenced to the death penalty in Tennessee.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Do they fuck around with their death penalty laws over there? Is it like...
Well, I'll spoil it and say she's still alive and she was sentenced a long time ago. So she's still sitting on death row.
Interesting.
So
okay.
It's not like some of the states where you're on death row and 2 minutes later you're done. She's been there a minute. So to go with my story, I brought the Lover's Lavender Martini, which is not because it's got lavender in it, but because it is lavender color. So it is made from 3 ounces of vodka, 1.5 ounces of cranberry juice, 1/2 ounce of blue curacao, 1/2 ounce of sweet and sour mix, and half of a can of 7-Up. And so the steps are to add everything to a shaker with ice, shake gently because you put the carbonated soda in there. And basically it's to make it all uniform in color.
And it's to shake with the 7-Up in the shaker.
Yes, but gently shake it and then strain it into your cocktail glass.
I have a feeling I'm not going to like this because it's so many sugary ingredients.
Yes. But we'll see. Maybe the 7-Up, if it is, you know, because that's not super sweet. We'll see. All right. Let's give it a try. Nope. Yeah, it's really sweet.
It's fine.
It's really sweet.
It is what it is. Yeah. I wouldn't order it again.
I'm not a huge fan of it, and I like sweet drinks, but that's pretty much the only thing you taste is just sugar.
It's like something they give you at like a swim-up bar at an all-inclusive resort.
Yes.
That's kind of what it tastes like.
Yes, where it's just sugar and no alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll ditch that one because it's not very good. We'll move on to our story, though. The person in question is named Krista Pike. She was born on March 10th, 1976 in Beckley, West Virginia. Her early years were full of instability and neglect. Her parents had a tumultuous relationship marked by divorce and remarriage to each other. So they kind of went on this like, oh, we're together and now we're not and now we are and, you know, on again, off again. It created a chaotic environment for young Krista. There were reports indicating that Pike was often left in unsanitary conditions, crawling through filth while her mother continued partying. So not mommy of the year. She was partially cared for by her paternal grandmother, and Pike cared for her in return. However, her grandma passed away when Pike was just 12 years old, leaving Pike very distraught, which led to her first suicide attempt. Throughout her adolescence, Pike endured episodes of abuse, but she also faced allegations of abuse herself and exhibited violent behavior of her own. So there were some accusations that, like, she beat up other kids, maybe sexually assaulted other kids, did, you know, what was done to her to other children. And it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't a good situation. Despite being described as intelligent, her school performance suffered due to frequently changing schools and her ongoing behavioral issues. In the 10th grade, she was placed in a juvenile facility where she learned about the Job Corps. Job Corps is a program aimed at helping struggling youth gain vocational skills. So basically, back in the day, I'm not even sure if it still exists. If it does, it might not be in this capacity, but like young adults, 17, 18 to 20 or so years old, could join the Job Corps, and then they would go live on like a campus basically and learn how to do job skills and things like that. And sometimes they would even like travel around and do jobs in other towns, other cities, and learn how to work, essentially.
Kind of like a vocational school.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
In 1994, Pike enrolled in the Job Corps program in Knoxville, Tennessee. That's where she met her boyfriend, Tadaryl Shipp. He was a fellow student in the program. They soon started a romantic relationship. This is where the lovers Martini comes in. And of course, you know, it's our brutal story, so bad shit happens. Both shared an interest in the occult, which would later play a role in a disastrous incident. On January 12, 1995, Pike, Shipp, and another student, Shadola Peterson, left the dorm with a fourth student, Colleen Slemmer. All four of them checked out when they left the building. So you can't just like come and go as you want. You had to acknowledge that you were leaving so that they have record of who's in the campus and not.
Mm-hmm. I might have missed this part, but is it like a punishment school type thing?
No.
Like a boarding school?
No, but they're living on a campus for Job Corps.
But like, you don't check out for college. You don't tell your someone, hey, I'm leaving my dorm to go get food. Like,
true. However, I think people that often joined Job Corps were ones that were lacking stability, and this kind of lent a little bit of stability to their life.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of troubled youths kind of situation, maybe. Not that everybody that joined Job Corps was in that situation, but I think some of them were. Kind of like, you know, the schools in different towns that the alternative schools often collect students that are kicked out of other schools.
Not suitable for the basic school environment.
Yeah.
That sucks. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So they did check out. There was record of them all checking out, all four of them. Yeah. Pike believed that Colleen had a romantic interest in her boyfriend, Tadaryl. The group went to an isolated area under the pretense of resolving tensions. Once there, Pike and Shipp attacked Slemmer, subjecting her to a 30-minute ordeal involving physical assault, and they carved a pentagram into her chest.
Jesus Christ.
Thus the occult tie. Yeah.
Yeah.
The assault went on, but ultimately ended when Pike took a heavy piece of asphalt and crushed Colleen's skull.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It gets worse.
Awful way to die.
It gets worse.
The caveman.
It is very caveman. Pike kept a fragment of her skull as a macabre trophy. But, yeah.
I'm just picturing, I was like big into dinosaurs and fossils and stuff as a kid. And I'd be like, oh, look at this cool fossil I have of a fish. And I'm just thinking of him being like showing his friends, like, look at this cool human skull fragment that I have.
Yeah. It's Krista that kept the skull fragment. They went back to the dorm, but of course, only three of them checked in. Rather than keeping quiet about everything and, you know, preventing suspicions of what happened to Colleen.
Blabbed about it, I'm guessing.
Pike proceeded to show fellow classmates the piece of Colleen's skull that she had kept.
That's what I'm saying. Look at my cool puzzle.
It was show and tell.
Jesus
Gross
Christ.
Show and tell. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not long after the death, Colleen's body was found and suspicions were raised when officials realized who Colleen had been with. Because they all checked out of the dorm together. So,
we didn't think Pike's, that part
Pike's possession of the skull fragment led investigators right to her. I mean, if you're
not like sneak out, why do you have to check out? I'm caught up on this check out thing that bugs me.
They should have been smart enough to check out, but they did not, or to sneak out, but they checked out. And if you know, one of the four ends up dead, it's definitely going to cause law enforcement to look at the other three that were with her and then further look at you if you're carrying around a piece of her skull in your pocket. So
I mean, just imagine being like the class. We all had weird classmates. Just imagine some dude comes up to you and he's like, some girl comes up and is like, I have something to show you.
Right.
So it's like, I knew that girl. Why are you carrying around her skull fragment?
Yeah, it's gross. Stop it. Nobody wants to see that shit.
I'm imagining it's soggy. Like,
I would think, it's probably, I mean, it's got, I don't know if it had brain matter on it, but I would assume it had some, I don't know. I don't know that she cleaned it. Either way.
Carries around in a paper towel like he lost his tooth at work.
Yeah. Within 36 hours of killing Colleen, the group was arrested. So pretty quickly. And it goes against our first rule, which is to keep your damn mouth shut.
Yeah.
She did not keep her mouth shut. Yeah. During her interrogation, she confessed to the murder, but said that they were only trying to scare Colleen. I don't know how you try and scare somebody, carve a pentagram into their chest, and then...
crush their skull with a rock. Right. Like a deer that's injured on the side of the road. What the
fuck? Crazy town. Pike was charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. A little over a year later, Pike was convicted of both charges. She received the death penalty. Her boyfriend, Ship, was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. So he didn't have to stay forever. Peterson received probation for her cooperation during the investigation and the trial. So the other girl in the group ratted everybody out. And so they were like, okay, you can have probation. I guess maybe she didn't physically kill Colleen. So they needed a, witness. Pike was not the model prisoner sitting on death row. She wasn't minding her business and laying low, which, I mean, I guess at that point, why would you? Because you're like, I'm going to die here, whatever. Her time on death row has been marked with further violence. In 2001, she and a fellow inmate attempted to strangle another prisoner with a shoelace. Which, for this stunt, she was convicted of attempted murder. Over the years, Pike has filed multiple appeals for her convictions. She cited factors such as ineffective counsel, mental health issues, and her age at the time of the crime. Her lawyers argued that her sentencing should be overturned because there was legal precedent in other cases in which it was determined that the death penalty for minors was considered unconstitutional. In another case, it was determined that life sentences for juveniles were also unconstitutional. So you can't put them, you can't give them the death penalty, but you can't give them life sentence either.
I kind of agree with that, but not in this. I feel like there should be exceptions.
Right, there should be exceptions. However, the judge determined that those cases didn't affect her because she was 18 at the time of Colleen's murder.
Yeah.
She hit the magic number. She had the magical birthday. She was an adult, so she gets to,
So when she was arrested, was she a minor?
No, she was 18.
Okay, so.
When she committed the crime, she was 18. She was a few months into her 18th year, but she was 18. In 2024, after nearly three decades in solitary confinement, Pike reached a settlement with the state of Tennessee, allowing her more interaction with other inmates and access to work opportunities. Pike's case continues to spark debate over the ethics of the death penalty, especially concerning young offenders and those with troubled backgrounds. While her appeals have been largely unsuccessful, discussions about her mental health and the circumstances of her upbringing persist. At this time, there is no date set for execution. And if she ever does get executed, she will be the first woman to be executed in Tennessee in over 200 years.
Okay. Figured a place like Tennessee would be gung-ho with death penalty, but I've never been there, so I don't know.
No. You kind of think of that. I, I think people assume that kind of stuff in the South because the South usually doesn't play with shit.
Tennessee is like South adjacent.
I think so.
Like,
I think so.
I don't know if I'd call it the South necessarily, but they're definitely more country lifestyle, I guess.
Yes, I would think so. Anyone that's listening that's from Tennessee that lives there or has lived there, please let us know if you consider yourself Southern, if you identify as Southern.
Yeah. I think because they have the Southern draw. So yeah. I think like people consider them Southern, but I don't know. People call themselves Midwest from like Minnesota. Like, I feel like Midwest is such a large region that maybe
that's true. I feel like Midwest is anything outside of the West Coast and the East Coast. So, like, middle of the country, we'll call West Midwest. But it's not West. It's
the
mid.
Weird part. Like, Klamath Falls is very Midwest for how close we are to the coast, I feel. Like, I listen to this podcast, Belly Up to the Bar, I think is what it's called. But, like, they just talk about Midwest stuff. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff they describe is, like, Klamath Falls, basically.
Oh, so
and I'm like,
Klamath is culturally Midwestern?
I kind of feel that way, yeah.
Oh,
it's
interesting.
Not, I wouldn't consider it, like, a West Coast town. Like, when people think of West Coast, they think of, like, Portland. L.A.
Yeah.
Like, shit like that.
Yeah, but, true. That's true.
I don't know.
All right, tell us your radioactive Boy Scout story.
Okay. So David Hahn was born on October 30th, 1976, in Royal Oak, Michigan, to parents Ken and Patty. When David was four, his mother was sent to a mental hospital due to her alcoholism, depression, and schizophrenia.
Ooh. Not good combo.
No. The latter two probably caused by the alcoholism, if I had to guess, but David was very interested in chemistry and science. He would often mow his neighbor's lawn so that he could afford to buy materials that he could use to run his experiments.
Okay. You said this wasn't a gross story, but every time we've had a person doing experiments,
they're
bad things.
I promise you.
Okay.
Like, he was arrested, but it was a very minor offense compared to all the other stories that we talk about, but...
Oh, okay. I just don't like it when you say experiments, because it's never good.
Yeah. I get where you're coming from, but I promise this one is lighthearted.
Okay. All right.
So, his grandfather gave him a book called The Golden Book of Chemistry Experiments. David was following the instructions in the book to make chloroform. The book also instructed him to sniff it. His family found him passed out an hour later.
It worked.
Turns out he was good at making chloroform. So this worried his father because some other experiments had gone wrong in the past, leading to explosions and whatnot. But
okay, Grandpa is a menace.
Yeah.
For having given him that book.
I mean, he probably didn't read the book. He's probably like, oh, my grandson likes chemistry. I'm going to get him this cool chemistry book.
He probably didn't get
the chloroform part, but
as a parent, oh, man.
So because of the experiments that had gone wrong, his father encouraged his son to join the Boy Scouts to try and distract him from his experiments.
Right.
However, David was given the merit badge in atomic energy, which I didn't know was a real Boy Scout badge.
No, neither did I. That's terrifying.
Teenagers aren't doing atomic energy experiments, but...
No, and they shouldn't be.
So, David wanted to collect every element in the periodic table, including the radioactive ones.
Okay. He's got a goal.
So, he came up with the idea of building a nuclear reactor in the shed of his backyard.
Okay.
He began collecting radioactive materials from household objects such as smoke detectors, vintage clocks, gun sights, and camping lanterns. There's a whole list of all the chemicals, but I don't know anything about that. Too smart for me. I'm not a radioactive scientist or whatever this guy's doing, but David was building a specific type of reactor called a breeder reactor, which uses common forms of radioactive isotopes to produce fissile materials that can be used for fission reactions.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but I'm pretty sure nuclear fission is like how they do
stuff in nuclear power. Reactors, and that's why it's in a reactor.
That makes power.
Yeah, not so.
While he didn't technically build a reactor, like, because that it's a very specific term, I guess, whatever he did make. So he boiled down these ingredients in a Bunsen burner and poured them into a lead mold that he had.
Okay.
And his creation emitted large amounts of radiation, about 1,000 times more than background radiation. Because there's radiation that comes out of the ground and from other random stuff in the area. Sure. But like his made 1,000 times more than just normal readings.
Oh my God. That doesn't sound good.
This worried David, so he decided to dismantle his creation and dispose of it. However, while he was disposing of it, he was pulled over by the police.
Okay. How old is he at this point?
17, I believe.
Okay.
He hasn't graduated high school yet. When the police found his contraption, he warned them not to touch it because it was radioactive. So he was like, hey, I wouldn't touch that if I were you.
Trying to be responsible, and they probably think he's making a joke or being a dick or something.
Well, no, they were worried he was making a weapon, so they called the FBI.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. All right. So they
On
took
June
him seriously.
26, 1995, a federal radiological emergency response team was sent to his house to properly dispose of the radioactive materials in his house.
Nice.
His home was officially designated a hazardous material cleanup site. Just imagine, like, your neighbor, all of a sudden there's people in, like, hazmat suits, and the CDC shows up and dismantles your neighbor's shed.
That would be terrifying.
So the shed he used for the experiment was destroyed and shipped to a radiation waste site in Utah. David was worried he would get in more trouble, so he threw out the rest of the radioactive materials in his house right into the garbage can.
No! That's not how you properly dispose of radioactive waste.
Crew on. Yeah. They need to call the garbage cleanup crew for his neighborhood and be like, hey, you should get checked out.
No kidding. And that was back in the day where they picked up the cans manually. They didn't have the truck that came with the arms and flipped it up.
So David refused medical treatment despite officials suggesting it due to the amount of radiation he was exposed to. David graduated from high school the following year and joined the Navy. He was honorably discharged due to medical issues, but in April of 2007, the FBI was contacted once again about David potentially building another reactor in his apartment.
In his apartment?
Yes.
Shit.
The FBI interviewed him and determined he wasn't a threat, but discovered he had started using cocaine heavily and diagnosed him as paranoid schizophrenic because David believed people could shock his genitals with their mind.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
In August of 2007, he was arrested for stealing all the smoke alarms from his apartment complex to build another reactor.
Oh,
in September of 2016, David was found dead, having overdosed on fentanyl, Benadryl, and had a blood alcohol content of 0.4.
Oh, my gravy.
Yeah, so he did 90 days for stealing the smoke alarms, but...
Okay.
The mugshot of him, he's covered, like, his face is covered in red sores. Like, it looks like he has chicken pox or something, and they think it's because of radiation exposure.
Wow.
Yeah. So this literal mad scientist was building a fucking nuclear reactor in his apartment.
What was the medical condition, do you know, that he got released from the military for? You said he was discharged for medical.
Yeah, I didn't really specify. I'm assuming he got hurt or something or had some vision issues, but it
I wonder if it was schizophrenia related. If he started showing signs and they were like, we can't have you
maybe
in the military.
Like he failed a PTSD test or something, but
maybe
the
firearms.
Time he was working in the military, he wasn't like deployed. He was working on a nuclear, battleship.
Oh.
He wasn't involved in the nuclear part. It looked like he was just since he
just
enlisted, he was
there.
Just like a normal crewmate. But.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think it was, like, mental health related, but I didn't see any information on that. So, I can't really say for sure, but.
Well, I mean. He's not doing any more experiments, so
true.
I guess. Wow, that's a wild one.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that ride.
Weird story. See, it wasn't he was doing experiments, but cool ones.
Yeah. Well, I don't think his neighbors or his parents thought it was cool. They were probably like, hey, we needed that shed in the backyard. Where else is the lawnmower going to go?
Good point. I don't know. That is so funny that just the image of like the CDC showing up to your neighbor's house. It's I think it's a zombie apocalypse.
It's horrifying. Yeah.
I think it's a British movie about the zombie apocalypse, and the CDC shows up to some guy's neighbor's house and they're all like, oh shit. And then the whole neighborhood's locked down and it's like, yeah, it's scary.
Yikes. Yikes.
Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. My chaser is an Instagram account called Django Smiles. And Django is a dog. He is like a shepherd mix dog. And he smiles. And his human feeds him different foods. And then he rates the foods based on his taste of them by smiling. And so she'll feed him like a French fry and then ask him like, where do you rate it? And then she starts counting. And when he smiles, then she stops. So like, I think she fed him a radish. And I believe that one, like she started counting down from 10 and then he smiled when it hit 5. She's like, okay, radishes
like hero
are 5.
Smiles.
Yes. But bigger than Hero smiles. Yeah, Hero was a good smiler, but Django, man, he like all his teeth you see, and he is so happy. He's a cute dog. But yeah, it reminded me of Hero a lot, and so I like that account.
So check that out.
Yeah.
I love my Hero boy.
Yes. How about you?
So my chaser is a recipe.
Okay.
This is my own recipe called chicken crack soup. So, everybody's heard of chicken noodle. I just threw my own little spin on it. So, you get a rotisserie chicken. I originally came up with this recipe because I needed chicken bones for making bone broth. Yeah. I was like, I need to keep buying rotisserie chickens, and I need something that's like kind of not necessarily healthy, but healthier than like making like a calzone out of chicken, like shredded right. chicken. But you take a rotisserie chicken. You can also just use chicken breast. Just you need chicken. I use a whole one for this recipe. So you do a classic mirepoix, onion, celery, carrots. And I throw in some heirloom tomatoes, 1 to 2 jalapenos, 1 to 2 russet potatoes. And you fry that all down until it's mm-hmm. soft. And then you throw in whatever seasoning you like. I use salt, pepper, chili powder, garlic, onion powder, and parsley and Italian seasoning. And then I'll throw in just some fresh herbs from the store, like chives usually or something like that. Okay. And then you throw in 2 cartons of bone broth. And sometimes I'll add heavy cream. I didn't add it this time, but just to thicken it up. And I use either egg noodles or I do pastini, like the little tiny pastas.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like couscous.
Okay.
And cook that all down for a couple hours. And oh my gosh, it's so good.
Sounds delicious.
Yes.
Do you, with your heirloom tomatoes, are those fresh heirloom tomatoes or are you finding canned?
From the store. They're whole tomatoes.
The fresh. Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
Because grocery store tomatoes don't taste like tomatoes. Like
no, they don't. They're
the
gross.
Ones you grow. Like
yeah. yeah.
Real tomatoes are so much better. And heirlooms are the only ones I can find in the store that taste like real tomatoes. So
true.
That's why I use
true.
Those.
Because
I don't
want to
use a whole can
them.
Of San Marzano or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I like it. That's good.
Yeah. I recommend everyone try it out. It's so easy to cook. All you do is just chop a bunch of vegetables. And then if you save all like the celery bits and potato skins and all the pieces of the vegetable, then you have mm-hmm. enough to make, like add into your bone broth. Oh, so good.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you just save like the onion skins, all the parts that you wouldn't put in the soup. You just save it
right.
for the stock and
for the broth,
throw it in there in the Instapot, or if you don't have an Instapot, throw it into a stock pot and boil it for a couple
for
hours.
The...
But
nice.
The Instapot makes it so you only have to use like 3 hours instead of 12. So
that's a bonus.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, good job. I'll have to give that a try.
Yeah. Let me know if you guys try this recipe. Send us a message. Let us know like if you like
yeah.
it or not. I'll drop some more of my recipes that I have. I got a whole list of them.
I think it's fantastic. Do you remember when you were younger and we used to have you cook dinner and you hated it?
Well, so the trade-off was if I did cook dinner, then I wouldn't have to do the dishes, and I hated doing the dishes more, so.
But you still hated cooking, and you fought us to cook one meal.
Well, I got hooked on it as soon as I cooked someone else's food, and they're like, you know how to cook? And I was like 16, I'm like, you don't?
Yeah. Good mom and dad here, doing a good job
yeah.
raising a son who can
like
cook.
The first
and
time
clean.
I ever cooked for someone else, it was literally just chicken breast covered in seasoning. And people were like, oh my gosh, this is delicious. You know how to cook? I'm like, it's so easy. You just cook it until it's brown.
Yeah.
And cover it in seasoning.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that wraps up today's episode. Thanks
it
for
does.
Listening, everybody. Go ahead and give us a rating on Apple. Give us a rating on Spotify. Give us a follow on Instagram. Do all that fun sure. stuff. We appreciate it. If you give us an Apple rating, we'll read it out. Just
yes.
If you guys want to shout out, go ahead and give us an Apple rating.
And share us with your friends. Tell everyone you know.
Yes.
All right. Love you, bud. Bye.
Yeah.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.